my mind is drawn to Gujarat, which is where Srila Prabhupada went in 1995. And for different reasons, I have liked this this story, whatever took place there in Gujarat.
You said 1995. 75.
I'm talking about going to the village of Sanand in 1975. And at that time, Srila Prabhupada came to this village, and the village was a traditional Indian village, and there was a king in that area. Of course, these kings are kings for a district, for an area, so they have a palace. In India, there are still many such kings to be found. And so the king of that particular district, he was welcoming Srila Prabhupada. And he had a very nice reception arrangement. He had servants. One was carrying an umbrella, a cloth, red cloth umbrella, which was held over Prabhupada. And he also had a beautiful chariot. And Arisori was the servant. So Prabhupada drove in that chariot, and Arisori stood on the board of the chariot like a servant, took the umbrella and held it over Prabhupada. So Prabhupada drove through the town or village with his white servant. And it obviously looked very impressive in an Indian village. The local people, they spontaneously started to chant Hare Krishna. They were never asked by anyone. They just, on their own, started to chant Hare Krishna. So Harisori was deeply impressed. It's such a pious place, such amazing people that they just spontaneously chant. Where in the world will you find that other than in India? You know. So he was deeply impressed. And then, there are two things I like about this thing. One was that at one point they offered Prabhupada this silver throne, and Prabhupada sat on this throne, and it was an enormous throne, and there are pictures of Prabhupada on that throne, and he sits on that throne with a face of, like, apologetic. His hands are folded. He's looking down, and the expression on his face is, I know it is a monster of a throne, and how can a human being sit on such a throne? Right? But I'm sitting on this throne because it's my duty, right, as the representative of Krishna. So it's one of my favorite pictures embodying humility, and I always remember that. But today, I'm not really remembering that detail so much, but I'm remembering more what happened when Prabhupada was in that place. He saw that the people were nice and so on, but it didn't impress him. He wasn't impressed, because Prabhupada saw that the fields were full of tobacco. And he made a point of that. As soon as he started his Bhagavad Gita lecture, in the very first opening line, he says that we should not grow tobacco in our fields, because Krishna says that actually real wealth means growing food grains. And immediately he started explaining how the leaders, and he said, he started to explain that the people don't know. They don't know what is the goal of life, and they are just blindly following blind leaders. And then he carried on and started to explain, yes, Pamans. He's saying all these things, they must be avoided. Panam, he says, includes intoxication, includes alcohol and all that. And in this way, Srila Prabhupada, he was not looking at, oh, how nice, they're all chanting Hare Krishna. You know, he was ready to point out the mistake. He was not thinking, oh, my host has looked after me so nicely, now I have to sort of speak sweet words in response, you know. They gave me so much respect. No, give him the truth. Just the truth as it is. And he explained to the people how they should grow their own grains and not go after money and so on. And he spoke in English. And you hear in the background in the lecture, you hear all the people just murmuring in the background. They weren't listening. The villagers weren't listening. But Prabhupada wasn't speaking to the villagers. He was speaking to the leaders. He spoke in English. Right? He was speaking in English and made it very clear to them that actually, this is to be done. Then after, he was saying to Harikesh, he was speaking to Harikesh, and he said to Harikesh, he said, yes, all over the world, the leaders, they are just, they're rascals. They are all adhering to so many different philosophies and so many ideas. They're rascals. And we should oppose them. We should expose them. And we should show who is the real enjoyer within the heart. Krishna. And Harikesh said, yes. He said, Srila Prabhupada, you already did that. You already exposed them. And Prabhupada said, I just opposed a selected few. He said, but now you must do the rest. And Harikesh said, he said that, yes, but Srila Prabhupada, you are so expert. You are so expert in defeating opposing arguments that, like, there's practically nothing left to say. Maybe we should make a Bhagavad Gita, a Back to Godhead article about what you said. And Prabhupada said, you write that Back to Godhead article. You should write it. He said, when we are in the temple, when we are at home, it is appropriate to eulogize or praise the spiritual master. He said, but because we must give him due respect. But words alone is not enough. We must do something. We must go out and fight. Right? That is real praise of the spiritual master. So I wanted to begin with that point, you know, that is really what Srila Prabhupada desired. And that he spoke in this way many times. In his own Vyasa Puja offering to his spiritual master, he's speaking about God brothers just ringing bells. Just ringing bells in the puja. And he was not so impressed because he wanted to see that somehow or other we would do these things of spreading the mercy of Krishna consciousness and opposing the confused philosophies that exist in the world. Prabhupada was not just sweet and not just always soft and gentle. Prabhupada was strong. Prabhupada was one who would stand up, who would face people. Prabhupada would be very strong. Like Sureshwar Prabhu was speaking about holding people by the cloth. Prabhupada did it also in MIT, in the Massachusetts Institute for Technology. An Indian man who was speaking about it is all one. It is all one, Swamiji and Prabhupada. And he is arguing, and the man would just carry on, it's all on, it's all on. And the end prophet regretted by the shirt. He said, is it a ball of cotton or is it a shirt? He said, finally he said, a shirt. God said, then push it back. And said, then don't say that it is all one. So Prabhupada was ready. At home, a lamb and a lion on the chase. He was ready to somehow or other face the world. So now, and that was so much the spirit in his presence. It was so deeply ingrained in everyone we're preaching here. We're trying to change the world. There's the story which we heard from Bali Narayan Maharaj, which is about a billboard which was advertising a paint company. And it shows a hand that was holding a paint can upside down. And the paint was splashing onto the earth. And the whole globe was becoming covered in paint. And it said, we change the face of the earth. And Prabhupada said, that's us. That's us. He saw, actually, in a deep way, they have taken away what they are claiming to do, something which they're not really doing. They're not really changing the face of the earth. Who is changing the face of the earth? No one is really changing the face of the earth, because puna, punas, charita, charanam, they're simply chewing the jute. The same sinful activities are going on generation after generation. In a different form, but basically the same ingredients. Nothing changes. How is the world changing? Who is changing the world? Is the paint company changing the world? They may change the externals, but they're not changing. But we are changing. We are changing the world. So Prabhupada very much had this changing the world kind of vision. And it's that resonated very well in the 60s and 70s, because it was just, the kind of post-war generation. Right? The whole world war had sort of created a world situation which suffered from the war. And as a result, the whole world was in the mood of building back up. So many things were destroyed. I mean, in my situation, my parents were 20 when the war began. And, so they went through the thick of it. Right? They and in the Netherlands, the Netherlands was occupied for 5 years, and so many things were going on underground. So the war, endlessly, I grew up with that war. I heard about the war every day, right? Many times. The war, the war, the war, you know. I mean, finish your plate in the war, your parents were eating, I know, tulip bulbs, right? Again and again, they tell me that I would eat tulip bulbs. So on. So the whole thing was strengthening the economy. Again, building up the economy of the world. And America was ahead, and they wanted to be ahead. And because they didn't have a war at home, so their economy hadn't suffered so much, and they wanted to stay on top. So the rat race, the for material wealth and sense enjoyment was in full swing. And we cannot blame so much that generation that the focus went on material things, because after all, things had really been so much destroyed worldwide. But then our generation, we saw all this materialism, thing like, you know. And they wanted us to be like them. And they said, we did it all for you. We were the ungrateful generation. And in the midst of that, Prabhupada came. And that generation was just ready to change the world. They wanted to change the world. And the Beatles came and sang Money Can't Buy You Love. On the flip side, She Loves You, yeah. Right? I mean, in those days, there were records that had two sides. So, you know, you bought She Loves You, yeah, yeah, yeah. But then the other side told you the real message. Money can't buy love. Yeah? That was a strategy there. And yes, and we sang it all. Yes, money can't buy you love. And then Prabhupada came with this exalted philosophy. And it strung a chord, but not the way of life, because there was also Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds. There was also these kind of things were also there. So it wasn't entirely that Krishna consciousness was a natural fit for all of us. But Prabhupada was never flattering or never catering to the audience. Prabhupada would just be straightforward, completely straightforward. You know, we had, there was the war in Vietnam, and of course in America it was a big issue because people were being drafted into the army and they were running away and hiding, and so many things were going on, and there was Woodstock, and one of the songs was 1, 2, 3, 4, 45, 4. And what was the rest again?
Don't ask me, don't give a damn. Next stop is Vietnam. 5, 6, 7. Open up them pearly gates.
Okay.
Wonder why tomorrow we're all gonna die.
Anyway, that was going on.
I'm sorry to bring it back, but
it was a. But it was on everyone's mind. And Prabhupada is preaching the Bhagavad Gita, and Arjuna has to go to war. And that was like the worst thing you could say. The worst thing. You couldn't say anything. You could, you know, to the hippies you could say anything, but not that you had to go to war. That was really like something. No, that was taboo. Although hippies were supposed to break taboos, and they were breaking taboos. That was their business. That war was taboo. To speak about war and to say anything like that, it was love and peace. So, but Prabhupada somehow or other, by his honesty, he convinced people to come to a point where they said they trusted him. They just trusted him. You could see he is not trying to impress anyone. Rupa Nuga says this, that the first time he came and saw Prabhupada, he noticed that Prabhupada wasn't trying to impress anybody. And that is sort of impressive. That's impressive. Because everyone is trying to impress somebody. And all the time, you know. The t-shirt, or, you know, the little beard, or, you know, some glitter here, some glitter there, or the whatever it is, right? It's all to impress somebody, yes? So, and Prabhupada was not out to impress anybody. Because Prabhupada wasn't speaking to please the audience. He wasn't trying to say the things people like. When you try to impress people, you try to say things they like. Right? You know, oh yes, and you got the people eating from your hand. Oh, he's so wonderful. Not Prabhupada, you know, give it to him straight, you know, completely straight. Sometimes saying things they really liked, and other times things they didn't like at all. But they had to swallow it. They had to swallow it. And or argue, and then you argue, right? No one dared to argue. we see that he was a very powerful person who could look right through people. So many people expressed that Prabhupada knew everything. He looked at them in one glance. He knew. He looked in their heart. And how was it possible? But it is not so difficult because the heart is right on your face. It is in the eyes. It is in the look. When in front of a pure devotee, how can one keep up all that false image that we are projecting to the world? Anybody who has false ego and is projecting a false identity in front of such a personality will lower the eyes. You can see it's all a hoax. It's all false. You're just simply performing a show. But Prabhupada was not just giving Bhagavad Gita as it is. Prabhupada himself, his whole life was as it is. Right? At every moment, the truth and nothing but the truth. He was ready to say the truth to anyone. Some of the managers sometimes thought that from a PR point of view, a public relations point of view, Prabhupada was difficult to deal with. I mean, a nightmare, something like, and they tried to manage it and cushion it and downplay it. But Prabhupada would not play the game. He was ready to simply speak straightforward. But this actually gained him real respect. Of course, in Amsterdam, right, which is sort of my hometown, I wasn't there in the temple when Prabhupada came. I might have been there in Vondel Park when Prabhupada came, because everybody was in Vondel Park. Right? And somehow or other, Vondel Park in Amsterdam was a place where all the hippies of Europe went. And there were thousands of hippies staying in the park, and the government just allowed it. The city council anyway had also some hippies on the council. Right? And one was starting a political party called the Dwarves. They said dwarves are better than human beings because dwarves are green. They're into gardening. And that party, they smoked joints in the city council. Although it was illegal, nobody said anything. So they allowed all the hippies to stay in the park. And it was extraordinary, because where in the world was it so liberal? Right. And thousands of hippies from all over. The whole park was just filled with hippies, all sleeping on the grass and having a spontaneous whatever it was. Right? happening, we call it. It was called happenings. We had happenings in the park, and it was happening, if you know what I mean. Although I didn't live, many of these hippies had no other place to stay because they came from all over Europe. Right? I only lived 20 kilometers away, but anyway, to be there with the happening, to not miss out. I also stayed in the park instead of in my bed at home. So we were just in that park. And Prabhupada came to that park. And when Prabhupada saw all the hippies, there was a stage program. There's an open air theater. It's still there. And the stage where Prabhupada performed his program was still there. There was a long kirtan, and Prabhupada spoke very short, because it was all hippies. And Prabhupada just said, kirtan. He turned to the devotees and said, for these people, just kirtan and prasadam. Forget the rest. So that was the situation. He He had that faith. He had faith that where there's kirtan and prasadam, then things will change. So it was going on very dynamic. The Amsterdam temple, which was opened shortly after. And Prabhupada, he installed, the first temple in Amsterdam was an apartment. It was an apartment. And what happened was, the devotees were there. Akshayananda was the president, and somehow or other Dhananjaya also had just arrived. Some others were there in a flat, and they had a ritual of cooking, and the real thing was the chaunts, the sabji, right? The chaunts. So the chilies had to be burned black, and then the spices. And somehow or other, the fumes went into the exhaust system, and it came out in all the flats. And so people couldn't breathe, and in no time they traced it back to the extraterrestrials in number, whatever it was, and they were on the street. But Prabhupada was coming, so they arranged. They looked for a place. They couldn't find a place, and finally they found something right next to Dam Square. And there was a vegetable storage place. It was just, in English we call it in India we call it a godown. It was a storeroom, and it had street tiles on the floor. And no windows, just in the roof windows. Anyway, this was all they could get. And they had no money. Dhananjaya became the president for the new project, and he arranged it that they were taking some wood from a construction site. After all, what to do for Krishna. So they went there and they brought wood loads, and they made a floor in the temple. And when they went for the last time, they saw the blue light of a police car coming. And they had just been loading up the van with wood, and then Dhananjaya saw the police coming, and Krishna inspired him. And he said, unload the van, take all the wood and put it back. So the police came and said, what's going on? All right, what's going on? Well, officer, we are monks, and we saw the wood, and we needed some for our church, so we took some wood. But then we felt it was really bad, and that God wouldn't like it. So we decided to bring it back. And the police said, all right, put it all back, and don't let it happen again. So in this way, they got away, and they got the temple. And then they needed an altar. And one devotee was in charge of building the altar, and he was an architect. That was Surabhi, right, who later became Surabhi Swami. And he made the altar. Another devotee was in charge of making deities of Lord Jagannath. And they had a meeting before and discussed it. But when the devotee who was supposed to make Jagannath came to the shop where he was supposed to buy a block of wood, he found a block that was bigger than was planned. He said, Jagannath wants to be big. So he bought the big block, but he never told Surabhi. And so we didn't see the deities until the time of the installation. So sure enough, the altar was way too small. So they hammered on a plank, somehow or other, so the deities could stand on the altar. And Prabhupada was upset. The television was there, and they were filming everything, and it was just 2 months after the Maharishi Yogi had been there, and everything was he was bubbly, and guru of the Beatles, and everything was he was jolly, and he was the Hare Krishna guru, and he was angry. He was very angry that things were not done properly for Krishna. He was angry when the hammering was going on, and how can I install the deities? Is this a temple? Yeah, can we put Krishna here? The altar wasn't right. Finally, you know, during the yajna, there were no fruits for the yajna. So Prabhupada said, where are the fruits? Bring the fruits. So Kishori, she went to the kitchen and she didn't come back. So one thing is very annoying. If you send someone to get something which you really need and they don't come back, right? I mean, I know about that. You know. That's when you get really agitated. Now, as a manager of many festivals, I've many times like, oh, they're not coming back. You know what's going on. Right? So she didn't come back. So Prabhupada got agitated and became visibly more angry. And then, you know, then he sent someone else, and they also didn't come back. So then finally they came and they brought fruit salad. A bowl of fruit salad. Really? And Prabhupada looked at it and said, this is totally useless. And she started crying. I mean, like, she started crying. I probably didn't care. He was still angry. He was totally angry. And the cameras were filming it and so on, but we could never trace that film. I've looked everywhere for that film. The Amsterdam Film Museum with the TV company. And again, it looks like we couldn't find it. Shame. Anyway, what happened then is that there was one new devotee. And that new devotee, he had a problem with anger sometimes. So what happened was, the devotees would say, just, you know, to him, chant Hare Krishna. So he raised his hand, right? And Prabhupada said, yes. And then he said, why are you so angry? Just chant Hare Krishna. And Prabhupada just put his hand in his bag and started to chant. And that, you know, is just so amazing. That is just, you know, that is humility. That one can take good advice from a fool. As Janakananda says. And Prabhupada did that. And actually, you know, from this anger that Prabhupada displayed, many people were so impressed. They could see, you know. He's in front of the television. You're in the camera, television, you know. Hi, Mom. You know, you're on TV. All these people are watching. And Prabhupada didn't care at all that he was on TV. You know, as far as him was concerned, the TV, you know, had no significance at all. Krishna was here, and he was not properly cared for. And that was serious, and that had to be dealt with. And people could see he was so angry because he just cared about Krishna. And they could really see he is really Krishna conscious. Right? He is representing Krishna consciousness, not only in words, not only in teaching, but he shows it by his own example, and people surrendered. And several people, a whole group of people, they joined from that program. They joined because it was just, it was just so impressive. And in this way, I know the story has been written by Vedavyas. Prabhu was at the time now Bhakti Gauravani Swami. In his, he has included it in his biography of Prabhupada in Germany, because the German devotees came to help for the installation. So he wrote it from a German perspective. So today I presented it a little bit more from a Dutch perspective. Right? Because I know all the devotees that have joined from that program, and he didn't realize that. He missed that detail. Which I think is a very important detail, because it showed how Prabhupada actually, by being truthful, by being truthful to Krishna, and just presenting Krishna consciousness as it is, without catering to the audience, was actually successful. Not cheap success. He was not interested in cheap success. He was not interested in getting so-called gain and advantages through cheap success by flattering people and just sort of compromising the philosophy and presenting a washed-down version of Krishna consciousness. Well, wasn't interesting. The other famous story which I heard from Burijan Prabhu about Prabhupada preaching in Japan, in Kobe. And in Kobe there was an Indian man who had a program for Srila Prabhupada, and this Indian man was close to the devotees, he liked them, and he was ready, he was speaking about giving a building for a temple. So the devotees are very excited. He's going to give us a whole building, right? A building, a temple. Right? And then the program was going to happen, but what was going on? The men also had another Swami from India. Right? And so they were making the arrangements for the program, and there was a Vyasa-san with a picture of the man's guru, and it was a big Vyasa-san. And then there was a small Vyasa-san, and that was then meant for Prabhupada and the other speaker. And then the devotee said, oh no, that's not possible. Because Prabhupada is a Jagat Guru, he's the guru of the whole world, he must have the big Vyasa-san. So, okay, there was a big discussion then, and finally the man agreed and said, alright, okay, then both of the speakers can speak of the big Vyasa-san. So, you know, then the program started and Prabhupada was speaking first. So Prabhupada was invited to sit on that Vyasa-san. And he was sitting on the Vyasa-san and Prabhupada spoke and gave his lecture. And then after the host came and sort of gestured, yes, that Prabhupada could now come down off the Vyasa-san so that the other Mayavadi sannyasi could sit on the Vyasa-san. And Prabhupada didn't come down. He just stayed on the Vyasa-san. And he sort of like very nicely smiled and sort of like, you know, respectfully took out, and he didn't come off the Vyasa-san. So the man tried several times and didn't know what to do. So finally he gave up. And then, well, he gave the little Vyasa-san to the other speaker. So probably was the little Vyasa-san, the Mayavadi speaker. And then, you know, then the Mayavadi started to speak, and like for the first few minutes, what I remember, for the first 7 minutes, everything was fine. The Mayavadi sannyasi was speaking, and then Prabhupada suddenly said, "Kirtan, Kirtan," and the devotees started, you know, "Hare Krishna," the tune of the day, "Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare," and drowned out the man's lecture. Although the lecture was in Hindi and no one understood it, Prabhupada said, "Yes, in the beginning it was okay, but then, you know, then he explained that everyone is God, and Prabhupada didn't tolerate it. He did not tolerate it." So he just drowned out the man's lecture. And then afterwards, the man came and said, "What your spiritual master did, what your guru did." And that was it. He never got the house, and Prabhupada didn't care. He didn't care. Yeah? Now, to balance this, there's the other story, which I also like. When a Mayavadi, also in some joint program, a Mayavadi came and there were many speakers, and at the end the Mayavadi came to Prabhupada and offered him a brochure of his ashram. So he got the brochure, Prabhupada got the brochure, one of those brochures, threefold open with a glossy finish, and Prabhupada accepted it nice. He said, oh, yeah, nice brochure, yes, very nice. And then the man said, yes. And he gave him a whole box. And Prabhupada said to the devotees, oh, yes, yes. Thank you very much. Please keep the box. Keep the box. So the devotees kept the box. Mayavadi brochures, you know, like radioactive material. It's like, you know, how can we keep this? How can we just touch the box, you know? And Prabhupada said, oh, just keep the box. And then on the next Sunday feast, Prabhupada said, that box that that Swami gave, that box, he said, yes, it's the box, the Mayavadi brochures. And he brought the brochures, and Prabhupada said, please give everyone one of the brochures. No. Now he's preaching Mayavadi. What's happening? And Prabhupada said, so you all got one of the brochures? Yes. And he said, like, okay, open it up and put it on the floor in front of you. And then Prabhupada told the devotees to serve prasadam on those brochures. And in that way, he didn't just reject that Mayavadi, he made him into a devotee. Yeah? Because he rendered voluntary service on his own accord. He gave a gift to Prabhupada, and Prabhupada engaged that gift in the service of Krishna, and therefore that Mayavadi was getting the benefit. And he, in this way, he finished his Mayavadi. It's just a matter of time before, you know, he starts chanting Hare Krishna and taking Krishna prasad. I'm sure he'll be a bhakta who will like prasad especially. So maybe he already joined. Maybe he's here today. In this way, it is just such a deep vision, not quick, and not just harshly opposing people and hammering and smashing, etc., but also opposing people, but also in a merciful way, always thinking of their welfare and their benefit, not just, you know, like smash this one, smash that one. And no, that spirit of somehow or other approaching them in a way that was relating to that individual, and that could bring that individual into Krishna consciousness. Because Prabhupada cared about everyone. He cared about every individual's well-being. He cared about every living being's progress. He cared about the mosquitoes. Although he said, yes, when a mosquito attacks, you can kill the mosquito, but still he himself was very careful with even small insects. There's that famous story of picking up one insect, opening the windows, I'm giving you the entire world. And let it out of the window.
To enjoy.
Yeah.
The cockroach. The cockroach.
I think it was not a cockroach. No, it was a small insect. Maybe it happened on different occasions. But whatever it was, whether it was a cockroach or whatever it was, that doesn't matter. It is simply, we should see how Prabhupada was able to stand up and speak strongly and face people, and yet, you know, impress them by his purity, his dedication to truth, and that there was no malice in him, no envy in him, no sense of harming everyone, but that he was really the well-wisher of everyone. Ravindra Sarup was his professor, and the professor was a professor in Hinduism. So Prabhupada said, what is Hinduism? The professor says, that's hard to say. And Prabhupada immediately just jumped on him and said, like, Oh, he's a professor in Hinduism, and he cannot say what Hinduism is. Here's my disciple, Swarup Damodar. He's also a PhD. Swarup Damodar, what do we call that? Cheating, Srila Prabhupada. Cheating. That's right. You know? That's right. And next moment, there was this incredible argument between the two, back and forth, the professor and Prabhupada, and it became worse and worse. It was really intense until Brahmananda, who was on the right side, came in and said to the professor, "You better get out of here before you make any more offenses." And the professor looked at Brahmananda and sort of got the point, you know. It was time to get out of there. And he left. And Ravindra Swarup was cringing, right? And of course, later he came to Prabhupada and apologized for bringing such a man. He was so offensive. But I'm sure he also at that moment saying, "Oh my God, what's happened to my professor?" Because he cultivated this professor for a long time. And Prabhupada just didn't care. He gave him the truth straight. 20 years later, Ravindra Swarup met that professor. And the professor said to Ravindra Swarup, he said, "Oh, remember when I met your guru?" And Ravindra Swarup trying to sink into the ground, you know. Like, "Oh no," you know. And then the professor said, "Actually, your guru was right." He was right. 20 years later, I don't know how long it took for him to accept that it was right. But just this spirit, Prabhupada, who was so tirelessly working, whether he was well or ill, on some occasions Prabhupada was ill. Prabhupada had a cold in New York, and that cold was intense. And there's a series of lectures, and you can hear the cold developing, you know, from wet cold to dry cold, and it sounds like a real cold. And then the devotees, they said to Prabhupada, just stay here. Just stay here. Don't travel. Supposed to go to Mon Ratiyaj. And Prabhupada said that... And he said, "No, I must go." And then the devotee said, "No, Prabhupada, just stay here. You don't need to travel." And then Prabhupada looked at them and said, "If I don't travel, then who will look after you?" And in this way, Prabhupada just put his mission before his own health. He put, of course, sometimes he rested, like when he had heart attacks, and it was very serious. Then he rested for some time, not too long, but he did. It was not foolish in that way. But in his old age, he pushed himself to spread this Krishna consciousness. And that is something that we should understand on this day, because that is Prabhupada's heart. If we look at what is the essence of Srila Prabhupada's coming to the Western world, the essence of all that is that his never-ending desire of somehow or other fulfill this verse, Yāra dehi tāra kāha Krishna upadesh, amara gāya guru hoya tāra idesh. Whomever you meet, just preach Krishna consciousness to them, and in this way, deliver the entire world. Become a spiritual master and deliver the entire world. And Prabhupada wanted that his disciples, in turn, would become spiritual masters. When Purijan writes in his book about Srila Prabhupada, he writes that that Prabhupada was translating and at night, and it was 11 o'clock, and Prabhupada invited a devotee to come and sit next to him while he was translating. The devotee said, "Oh, Prabhupada, I'm I am very tired now. I have to go to bed. I mean, I've been up the whole day. I'm finished. I have to go to sleep. And Prabhupada said, I'm not going to bed. And Prabhupada said, and then the devotee said, yes, but you are a pure devotee. And then Prabhupada said, why are you not a pure devotee? So this is for all of us. We cannot sit here today and just glorify Srila Prabhupada and come out with some memories, right? And not take it upon ourselves. He was an example, a teacher by example. And he wanted us to also become pure devotees. Right? And he wanted every single one of his disciples to be a spiritual master. Siksha or Diksha, that they can decide. So he wanted. So now we have the next generations of devotees. And we're all inheriting that same. This is what we're inheriting. One of the moments that really means something to me is when we are on Srila Prabhupada's disappearance day in his room in Vrindavan, and it is time for that arati. And then at the end of the arati, right, in the room, Prabhupada's chadar is taking off the bed, and you get Prabhupada's chadar on your head. And it's a heavy chadar. It's one of those gray wooden chadar, and you feel the weight of the chadar on your head. And when I feel that weight, I sort of feel like, now the weight of ISKCON, of everything that ISKCON stands for, now it's on our heads. Somehow or other, it is on our head. And today, I'm telling you, it's on your head. It is on your head. That weight is on your head, each individual one. In your way, do something to oppose all the nonsense philosophies that are in the world. Maya is preaching. Hare Krishna movement is not preaching so much anymore. But Maya is preaching full steam. Full steam everywhere. So, do something. Either on the street with books or do it on the internet. Right? You know, safe from home, right? But or whatever, secret weapons, but something. Let us, when we are glorifying Srila Prabhupada, there is no doubt that we glorify him the most by preaching Krishna consciousness. That is the one thing that is his greatest pleasure, and then all the greatest blessings will be upon us.
Maybe you can give us